646-2629 on this Earth Day. Everyone says Happy Earth Day, like it's some sort of holiday. Isn't that weird? I've been hearing that from folks in talking to people. Happy Earth Day. It's not like Happy 4th of July. If you think about it, the whole reason Earth Day was started was to raise awareness that we're killing it, basically. Hey, remember the thing we're on, that rotating orbit thing? Yeah, that we're all, like, living off of? Yeah, well, it's going down, okay? That's Earth Day. So it's really not like, you know, we've commercialized this holiday now. You go to all the stores and there's, like, Earth Day decorations, and we cut down trees to celebrate Earth Day and print and ink and make products to celebrate Earth Day. No, that wasn't really the point of all of this. The point of all of this was raise awareness. All right. Before I go off on my tangents today, we've guests to be talking about Earth Day. And I got a lot of emails, obviously, over the last couple of days, as we've been talking about. Yesterday was quite the day with torture, CIA, and a lot of developments along those lines that continue today. And we're gonna continue with that theory, President Obama. Before I get into, I'm gonna make you think, okay? I'm gonna challenge your thinking. So if you don't want to be challenged, if you don't want to, just a fair warning. I'm gonna challenge your thinking here today, in regards to our conversation over the last couple of days. But President Obama just spoke, so let's get you the latest. Let's get you caught up. President Obama was in Iowa. At a former Maytag factory that had been converted into a wind turbine plant. Maytag left offshore, probably, I'm not sure. And now there's on that spot, life with wind. So part of it, let me see, we have a lot of sound coming at you from his speech today about all the different approaches to energy that we're going to have to take to deal with not only global warming, but our economy and national security. But since he started with wind and the wind situation,
we are now poised to do exactly that. According to some estimates, last year, 40% of all new generating capacity in our country came from wind. In Iowa, you know what this means. This state is second only to Texas in installed wind capacity, which more than doubled last year alone. The result? Once shuttered factories are whirring back to life right here at Trinity. At TPI Composites, where more than 300 workers are manufacturing turbine blades. Same thing. Elsewhere in this state and across America. In 2000, energy technology represented just 0.5% of all venture capital investments. Today, it's more than 10%. So the recovery plan seeks to build on this progress and encourage even faster growth. We're providing incentives to double our nation's capacity to generate renewable energy over the next few years, extending the production tax credit, providing loan guarantees, offering grants to spur investment in new sources of renewable fuel and electricity.
Okay, so he's going to continue to do it.
Electricity consumption grew 50% in this country over the last three decades.
In California.
In California, it remained flat.
California can do it.
I want everybody to think
about
this.
All my LA fans.
Over the last several decades,
shout out to California.
Country, we used 50% more energy. California remained flat. Used the same amount, even though that they were growing just as fast as the rest of the country. Because they were more energy efficient. They put in some good policy early on that assured that they weren't wasting energy. Now, if California can do it, then the whole country can do it. Iowa can do it.
Okay, so he's pointing to California. It's so interesting today as I prepared for the show, the difference in what's happened in California and, say, Detroit, where we're based here. And Arnold Schwarzenegger made a visit to Detroit here. When was that? Yesterday, day before the Society of Automotive Engineers, huge conference here. All the automotive people that get together and actually design the cars. And they interviewed Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I've got lots of sound from that interview about energy policy, cars, autos, the fact that the people, he thinks that Detroit hates him, and I'm going to tell you why. But let me summarize my thinking on all of this stuff, because I've been pulling it all together. Here's what I've been thinking about this. I'm going to start with this before we get into the reaction to yesterday, which a lot of people said, well, you know, a crime. Let me make the analogy. A crime was committed when we were talking about the persecutions. A crime was committed, therefore, we have no more important objective in the Bush administration than to pursue justice, because there were laws against torture. The administration allegedly broke those laws and tortured people, and some people presumably were killed, I think the reports are. And so since those are laws and the Constitution says you must uphold those laws, there is no greater priority than to go ahead and prosecute right now, immediately. Okay? All right. Let's just accept that premise for a second. John, get the 60 Minutes ready for me, if you will. So I'm thinking, okay, I received a lot of heat over that and a lot of emails that I got to tell you, frankly. I'm going to say this, I'll say it more than one time. I never said we shouldn't prosecute. I've only asked the question. If prosecuting now at this moment means we forego any action on energy, cap and trade, energy policy, or health care, like completely blow it, should we consider doing both at a different time? Like get the energy thing taken care of? That was my question, right? So as we come back, I'm going to frame for you another question. I've looked at this with some new thinking, and I'm going to challenge you on this. So let's do that. I hear my music, so I can't set it up now, but I'm going to. President's out there today with here's what we can do. Very much the can do now. It's what we have to do now, is what he's saying. Have to do now. Should have been done 20, 30 years ago. No question. It has to be done now, or the whole planet is screwed. When we come back, I'm going to give you the other two choices. And I'm going to let you choose which one's more important, okay? You're going to love this. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629 in the Nancy Skinner Show. I got it together. On the Nancy Skinner Show, I was rushing because I was getting the audio from President Obama's speech today in Iowa and cutting all that up so we could dissect some of the new announcements, and we'll get to all that if you don't have the ability to have a TV. I wanted to make sure we got that for you. We did. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking about. Here's the little analogy I had going on in my head. I'm going to put it out there because that's what I do. All right, because we're sort of transitioning. I know a lot of people were fired up yesterday about, and I got so many emails, I will share them with you, that saying, Nancy, we must prosecute. It's about justice, and we lost our moral standing in this world as a result of these laws being broken. Lots of those, okay? And I want to first make very clear, I never said we shouldn't prosecute. Please stop saying that. You're either willfully saying that, you're choosing to change what it is I'm saying, or you didn't hear me, so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, okay? Didn't say that. I said, how do you do it and accomplish these things that are so important at the same time? And then I'm thinking about that. Started thinking about that. Earth Day. Okay, great. Well, listen, you know, there was a law on the books, actually, Nixon, National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, establishing EPA and various laws, but one of the EPA laws on the books was that the EPA must protect public health as deemed by scientific research. And during the Bush administration, it was clearly established that scientific research was rejected, hidden, and therefore the laws were broken. The laws, as defined by the Constitution, were broken. If you don't believe me that we crossed that point, let's revisit 60 Minutes. Remember when they had James Hansen, who is the world-renowned NASA scientist on global warming, who was censored? If you forgot, I'm going to remind you.
Hansen is arguably the world's leading researcher on global warming. He's the head of NASA's top institute studying the climate. But this eminent scientist says that the Bush administration is restricting who he can talk to and editing what he can say. Politicians, he says, are rewriting the science. Well, there'll be none of that tonight, because James Hansen is telling what he knows on 60 Minutes.
You believe that the administration is censoring what you can say to the public?
Well, they're censoring whether or not I can say it. I mean, I say what I believe, if I'm allowed to say it.
What James Hansen believes is that global warming is accelerating.
At this point, that humans control the climate? Is that possible?
There's no doubt about that. The natural changes, the speed of the natural changes is now dwarfed by the changes that humans are making to the atmosphere and to the surface.
Those human changes, he says, are driven by burning fossil fuels, which pump out greenhouse gases like CO2, carbon dioxide. Hansen says that his research shows man has just 10 years to begin to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
10 years.
Or global warming will reach what he calls a tipping point and will become unstoppable. He says the White House is blocking that message.
Oh, this is a couple years ago, by the way.
In my 8 years. More than 3 decades in the government.
One presidency.
Witnessed such restrictions on the ability of scientists to communicate with the public.
Restrictions like this email that Hansen's Institute received from NASA in 2004. There is a new review process. The White House is now reviewing all climate-related press releases. Why the scrutiny of Hansen's work? Well, his Goddard Institute for Space Studies is the source of respected but sobering research on warming. It recently announced 2005 was the warmest year on record. Hansen started at NASA more than 30 years ago and spent nearly all of that time studying the Earth. How important is his work? We asked someone at the top, Ralph Cicerone, president of the nation's leading institute of science, the National Academy of Sciences.
I can't think of anybody who I would say is better than Hansen. You might argue that there's two or three others as good, but nobody better.
I find a willingness to listen only to those portions of scientific results that fit predetermined, inflexible positions. This, I believe, is a recipe for environmental disasters.
Ever since he said that, NASA's been keeping an eye on Hansen. NASA let us sit down with him, but only with a NASA representative taping the interview. Other interviews have been denied.
And I object to the fact that I'm not able to freely communicate via the media. National Public Radio wanted to interview me, and they were told that they would need to instead interview someone at NASA headquarters, and the comment was made that they didn't want Jim Hansen going on the most liberal media in the nation. So I don't think that kind of decision should be made on that kind of basis. I think that we should be able to communicate the science.
Okay, so here's my question for you. If there is such outrage and I'm not saying it's not justified, I'm making a comparison, of there were laws broken that resulted in the loss of moral standing of our country, where some people were tortured and some killed. Where's the lack of outrage that laws were broken? EPA has a duty to uphold the laws, as scientists describe. That's a law. It was broken. It was the first strike against our moral standing. It was Kyoto. That was the first cut, folks. It wasn't Iraq. And this broken law could result in millions dying. Why is there no comparison? Why aren't we saying prosecute for that? Huh? How about them apples? Where's the outrage on the laws broken that threaten all of humanity? 1-888-64-NANCY. 1-646-2629. Well, I want that feedback from you on the Nancy Skinner Show. Everyone to be consistent here in your thinking. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on this. Obviously, that's the Nancy Skinner Show. That makes me Nancy Skinner. That means since I got started on all this global warming stuff after I read Al Gore's book, Earth in the Balance, started working on sustainable development, helped rebuild flood towns as models of sustainability, won a presidential award for our work. Then I said, you know what, we got to get the public on board, because right now Rush Limbaugh's out there saying it's a hoax. Unless we win the hearts and minds of the public, nothing's going to happen. That's why I got a radio show on WLS in Chicago back in 1997. Yes, one of the first progressive radio hosts ever. Even though all my emails suggest I don't have the credentials to do what I do. My issue, global warming, it's Earth Day, friends, okay? So I'll take up my little chips on my shoulder later. But here's my point in making this connection between yesterday and today about the torture and global warming. There is a law on the book that says that the government, Clean Air Act, must regulate pollutants that threaten public health. During the Bush administration, scientists clearly said that global warming was a threat to public health. Those scientists were shut down and censored, and those reports were redacted. Therefore, those laws were broken. And those laws being, it's just a bill. We know our constitutional framework, right? That's the Constitution. If Congress passes a law, the administration, the executive branch has to uphold it. They didn't. They contravened their own laws. That makes that violation of law that resulted in perhaps millions of people who will die already. Because we already know, with the increase in a global average temperature, that there's been an enormous amount of extreme weather events. Katrina, I mean, how many people there? These hurricane fives, not the frequency of those, but the heat in the ocean causes them to be bigger, higher category hurricanes. How many people died in that? Right? Across the world, tsunamis, hurricanes, extreme weather events, flooding, millions and millions will die. We're at this 8-year window right now. If we don't get it right, the planet will die. So my question to you all was, who were so outraged yesterday that laws were broken, where some were killed, probably some people were killed in that torture, and our moral standing was lost. Our moral standing's been lost because of this. Kyoto was the first offense to the world public when President Bush was running for office, and he promised to regulate CO2, and he turned around. The first thing he did in office was snub them. That was the first snuff. So that made go when we went into Iraq. If I have to go back, because I'm on the air this time, then going back to Iraq, people were they were mad at him about Kyoto. That's what made Iraq so hard. That's why the nations of the willing were few and far between, because they were mad about Kyoto. So I'm just saying there's a comparison here that doesn't deserve, I think, the outrage or attention that it should. So let me get to your calls, and I got lots more sound on this too, but let's start with Alice in Los Angeles. Hi, Alice. Hello, Alice.
I just want to tell you, I tried to call last week and I couldn't get through, but you're very even-handed, and I don't like vitriol from the left any more than I do from the right, and you're great. and progressive. So, but I just wanted to say that there's so much outrage about all the violations of law that the Bush administration committed that I think people are overwhelmed with their own anger and rage, that they don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because it's so big, and I've been outraged for 8 years, and I
it's tough to be outraged that long, isn't it? I mean, just on a physical level.
I train people in anger management, so it's really...
Oh, my God. If you're having trouble, Alice, and you're a trainer in anger management, Lord, help us.
Well, it's just that there's so many violations of the Constitution, the wireless wiretapping, the lack of regard for human beings. The only time he gets involved is in Terry Schiavo's case. He breaks up a vacation. I mean, you can't... There's just too many.
I know. So here, do you think, this is interesting, I'll tap into your expertise, that the furor we're seeing over the last couple of days about CIA and wanting prosecutions is a culmination of kind of all that anger, not just specifically related to the violation of the Geneva Convention and our restrictions on torture, that you were just seeing the anger of 8 years sort of crystallizing into that? Because it would seem to me, on a logical basis, if you're looking at which one of the policies, which one of the actions of that administration had the most long-lasting or enormous impacts on all of us, it was what I just played for you. The fact that they shot down all the science on global warming, because that would have changed everything. If he had kept his promise, if they had regulated CO2, the auto industry would have been in a different place. I'm going to play an interview with your governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in Detroit yesterday or the day before. That's going to shock you. So much more would have changed. The rest of the world would not have hated us so much. And because he didn't do that, the number of deaths that will already ensue, because we've already reached this 350 parts per million, that magic number. So we know it's essentially, we're at the precipice now. I'm rambling. Is what my question was, is that anger just being crystallized into this prosecute on this one issue? Or do you think that people just aren't real, aren't putting two and two together?
I think that people's anger finally has a place to focus. I think that gives people an opportunity to focus on something and an actual chance to get this guy prosecuted in his administration.
All right, let me ask you another question. Then you just said, and I don't mean to cut you off, but Alice, you're great. So what you said is it gives people a place to vent their anger. So, okay, so here's my third choice I'm going to introduce in this conversation. Would we rather prosecute President Bush on torture, prosecute for the lack of upholding the law of the land concerning global warming, and or the third one, instead of focusing anger, focus that energy on actually fixing global warming in this eight-year window that we have? Which one of those three, if you're an adult... Okay, if you are across with between Buddha and Obama, do you choose?
Okay, you give me no option, but I say there's a Holy Trinity. Do all three of them. I think we need to focus energy definitely on proactive, energy. Put our energy into global warming and changing our environmental, our personal environmental practices, but I think we should also prosecute, because I think when you allow people to get away with things like this, there are no logical consequences for these kinds of abuses, that is a message to everybody, and it's a message to people who get prosecuted, who can't afford not to.
I hear you. Alice, you're a wonderful call, and I'm so glad you took the time to call.
Oh, thanks a bunch.
Okay. Thanks. We'll continue. Lots of people want to jump in here, so we'll move along and thank Alice. Let's see. We are moving along to Bernie. Bernie's also in L.A. Hi, Bernie. How are you?
I'm doing great. In fact, Alice said everything I would say very eloquently. I think we don't have to make that choice between those three and many other options. If we did, I'm with you 100%. You definitely want to get the action going so we can actually solve our problems. But I think we can handle all three at once. And I also agree with Alice that, this is the first thing to kind of raise its head. So people that weren't really aware of how the administration was doing things, they are all of a sudden aware of something. By the way, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're just, okay. I can hear you. Good. Sounds like you're jogging or something, though.
No, I am driving, and I'm going to find the first place I can pull. I'm driving away from you.
I'm jealous because I'm picturing you jogging along Santa Monica's beach there, you know, where I would sometimes frequent.
I am actually about to park at Santa Monica Beach, so that's funny. I'm in Santa Monica, thank God, because yesterday and the day before, talk about global warming, record-setting heat in April. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I don't have air conditioning in my car.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my problem, of course. But anyway, yeah, just that this is the first thing that I think people are seeing.
Okay, but let me go back to your I'm connecting some dots here because, you know, maybe that's my role is to connect these dots and say, hey, wait a minute, this was a law in the books that was not enforced. It's not as graphic as torture, you know what I mean? But it does, because I studied these laws when I was working in the field. There's a law that says EPA must protect public health as determined by scientists. I mean, that's in the act, and they ignored the act, and we know that. Those people came out and testified, so the laws were broken. So that's, you know, the Constitution wasn't followed, and millions of people are probably going to die. And I'm trying to figure out why is it doesn't cause the same furor over torture where, you know, decidedly people died, but, you know, how many? I don't know, a handful, 100? I don't know. It's not going to affect the fate of the planet forever. I know that.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right about that. We definitely, you know, if you have to weigh them side by side, the environment is probably the biggest issue right now because it's our planet, it's our home.
All right, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
Real quick, because this is the next moving this thing along. So if you said if we had to choose among those three, you would choose fixing the problem now. But I think a lot of people are calling in saying they think it all can be done.
Yeah.
There's one more principle I want to put out here, I guess along the lines of the Obama-Buddha thing. There is such a thing as, you know, there's only so much space, right? And there's almost so much, like, what you put your attention on, it consumes the oxygen in media. What you put your attention on, Wayne Dyer would say, expands. So, in a way, I understand this, we can do everything mentality, but on a logical level, but on a different level, we all know that's not possible, don't we?
Well, that's why Obama's got people to work with him, I think. You know, that's why he really said, okay, this is up to Eric Holder as far as the torture situation. You know, whatever Eric Holder, you know, discovers, I'll back him on it. But Obama doesn't actually have to spend his time on it. And I think that's the great thing about putting together a team. Now, I'm not that hot on all of this team, but that's the thing.
But it's not a question of time, his own personal time and paying attention to it. It's our time. It's, how do I explain this? It's quantum time.
So you're talking about, like, focus. The public conscience. Like, can we actually focus on all those things? Okay, good point.
Absolutely, that there is such a thing, you know, that out there with the now and in modern, and a lot of people have said to me, you know, wrote me emails saying, hey, during the Depression, he was focused on the banks and the Depression and the war and all these different things, but they didn't have cable channels. They didn't have the influence of modern media that concentrates and magnetizes the public's attention on, you know, essentially one major thing at a time. You know, it's Susan, now Susan Doyle or Susan Boyle, is she a fraud? And then the next day, you know, it's whatever, from impeachment. It's like a magnifying glass, this thing called media now. And so you helped me, Bernie, move that conversation to the place I wanted it to go. And I want people to say, well, I'm full of crap about that, or no, they get that.
Well, I think it's a good open question. I don't think it needs an answer right away. I think that's a good question to put out there to kind of explore and experiment with. And, you know, see and really, you know, try it out. It's not that, you know, you and I can, well, you can, but I can't literally try it out. But, yeah, that's a very good question, a very good point.
Good.
Thank you for it.
Well, thank you for calling and getting me to that point in the conversation. And you go have fun in Santa Monica. I'm so jealous. As we sit here, it's yucky and rainy in Detroit. You're
on
the beach.
I teach piano, so I'm going to be doing that in a sec. So,
lovely. Great, Bernie. Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. More of your calls coming up here, folks. I guess essentially, if you're just tuning in, I'm making the parallel about the laws broken to uphold the laws on protecting public health and global warming. Where's the outrage there that we see with the torture? And if you had to choose among those choices, wouldn't actually using this presidency, this 8-year window to kind of fix it for all of humanity be kind of the most Buddha-like choice? Or no? Is it the Constitution? Justice? Someone said to me, I don't care about the planet. I don't care about health care. I just want him convicted. And I had to think about that last night, too. As long as Bush is in jail, it doesn't matter. You're happy with the planet going down the tubes and people dying and stuff like that. Come on, people. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629 on the Nancy Skinner Show. Day for me. Not just to go buy little Earths and hang them up in my house. Happy Earth Day. No, it's because this is how I got started on all of this. God, I should have gone to Wall Street and made a fortune. 1-888-64-NANCY. And then just donated to causes on global warming. But no, here I am saying this. Here's a question, and I get right back to your calls. But look, and I'm making this case saying they clearly, the Bush administration, I followed it clearly, they rejected, they censored the scientists who were saying it was a harm to public health that was in clear violation of the Clean Air Act, a law on the books as governed by the EPA. It's a violation of the Constitution. It ruined our moral standing in the world. In fact, it was the first thing that ruined our moral standing in the world. Millions of people will die. Where's the outrage on that one as compared to the torture? Let's go to Tom in Sylmar, California. Hi, Tom. Hello, Tom. Tom, you there? That's right. Tom's going to hear me in about 7 seconds. So in the meanwhile, we'll go to Alan in Beverly Hills. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. Listen, we can handle both at the same time. The judiciary, the federal courts will try Bush and Cheney, and our Congress, the legislature, will handle the environment, the health care. And one other point real quick, Nancy. If I was the president, I would tell the world and Americans, especially the college students, the teenagers, to watch the trial every day like we did when we had the Watergate, when the Watergate was going on. We had televisions at the university in Santa Barbara in our dorms. I'm sure high schools at Beverly Hills High School had TVs going so the children could listen to how our government works and watch it. We learned from this.
Alan, you've just made an excellent point. And by the way, I rented a Frost Nixon last night. Have you seen it yet?
Not yet. Yes,
okay.
I want to see it.
And what I'm going to do is actually probably I won't have time because it's Earth Day today. I've got lots going on. We're hoping to hear from Bobby Kennedy Jr. And others. There's a really important point in that movie about our discussion. And what you just said, back to your call, is you said he can do both at the same time, but you want everyone to watch all the hearings all the time, which is my point. Here's the modern reality. If everybody is focused like a light beam on Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and Addington and Cheney, and these hearings are every day and we're going to be fixated on it, what happens is the public polls, this is how it works, okay? We're so obsessed with that. The partisanship goes way up. You got Dick Cheney out every day, Karl Rove on the TV shows, and all of a sudden the approval numbers go way down. In the public's mind, because they toss it up to partisanship and they hate that, so they don't the support for this popular president who campaign on a change and fixing these problems of 30 years and ever those numbers go down. When those numbers go down, the people in Congress right now where we have a majority but a tenuous one at that, they look at those polls and those conservative Dems. There's more conservative Dems and there's more ability of the private sector interests who don't want global warming. They don't want cap and trade. They don't want health care to get into that system and muck it up because the president, his capital rests on his approval rating. And that's how he can push things through. And there is a window to do that. And if you reject, you don't think that's how it works. And I got a lot of people calling saying, we can do everything. We can focus every day on Dick Cheney television and still get enough political approval to get cap and trade, which is, do you know how big cap and trade legislation is? Do you know how enormous? We're talking about capping all of the carbon dioxide in our economy, and then setting up a massive exchange to deal with it that will change how we make everything, how we build our buildings, all of that. It is the biggest piece of legislation that there possibly is. Do you honestly, people, think that we can pass that, keep the political capital high enough to get the conservative Dems and the special interests out of the way when we have 24/7 Dick Cheney prosecutions on cable television? Okay? That's how I'm saying it. That's the question I'm asking you. Because I'm thinking, practically speaking, no. No. But I'm going to let you weigh in on that coming up. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. I told you I was going to make you think today. Got lots of those emails yesterday. Whoa. People questioning my credentials. Well, I got some good ones, too. Actually, I got an apology. James apologized for being out of line yesterday. Thank you, James. Let's see. What else we got? Who is this? This is Marla. Said, I agree with you and Obama that we need to recognize the priorities and where to put our energy. As most of us already know, the only adult in the room is Barack Obama. Maybe our job is to grow up. Okay, that's Marla. Andy writes in, personally, I would rather see, and here's the question, if you're just tuning in, I should do that. I'm going to keep moving this along with some sound here so you get this. It just occurred to me after this discussion about laws were broken, that we've been talking about this. If laws were broken, we have a constitution, darn it, ruined our standing in the whole world because those laws were broken and people died as a result of the torture. And I thought, you know what? There was a law on the books about global warming. Well, it was actually about protecting the environment. In the Clean Air Act specifically, created under NEPA legislation, Nixon-era legislation, that the EPA must restrict pollutants that harm the public health. Clear evidence was presented to the Bush administration that CO2 was affecting public health and could harm not only just some people, but humanity. And as we'll visit another little section of 60 Minutes here, just if you forgot this, Scott Pelley did a very compelling piece. I mean, this was brought to the public's attention that they were silencing the scientific evidence in violation of a law. Let's go with the second piece of this story.
Dozens of federal agencies report science, and much of it is edited at the White House before it's sent to Congress and the public. It appears that climate science is edited with a heavy hand. These drafts of climate reports were co-written by Rick Piltz for the Federal Climate Change Science Program. But Piltz says his work was edited by the White House to make global warming seem less threatening.
The strategy of people with a political agenda to avoid this issue is to say, there is so much to study way upstream here that we can't even begin to discuss impacts and response strategies. There's much too much uncertainty. And it's not climate scientists who are saying that. It's lawyers. It's politicians.
Pilz worked under the Clinton and Bush administrations, and each year he helped write a report to Congress called Our Changing Planet.
You're responsible for editing Our Changing Planet, and you send a review draft to the White House. What happens?
It comes back with a large number of edits, handwritten on the hard copy by the chief of staff of the Council on Environmental Quality.
And the chief of staff is whom?
Phil Cooney.
He is a scientist?
No, he's a lawyer. It was a lobbyist for the American Petroleum Institute before going into the White House.
Phil Cooney, the former oil industry lobbyist, became chief of staff at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Pilz says Cooney edited climate reports in his own hand. Here, a line that said Earth is undergoing rapid change becomes maybe undergoing change. Uncertainty becomes significant remaining uncertainty. This line that says energy production contributes to warming is just crossed out.
He was obviously passing it through a political screen.
That being Phil Cooney, who was chair of the White House Environmental Council, and as the piece goes on to say, left the Bush administration to go work for ExxonMobil. Okay? All right. So follow the bouncing ball here, folks. What I'm trying to say is that there is a clear law that says the EPA must protect public health. They knew that public health was not being protected. They denied the science by people from the Petroleum Institute who had an economic interest in doing that. It was exposed on the corporate media. Andy, I'm going to get your email in just a second. Through that, what happened, right? Where was the outrage about that? In fact, there were lawsuits. I think Environmental Defense Fund and others tried to sue, saying this law is being broken. It actually, but the problem was, and here's where I'm trying to get everyone to focus. The problem was that the courts were so stacked with Bush appointees who were ideologically driven, that wouldn't take a look at the facts without some ideology behind it, that it took a long time. Finally, there was a court ruling that forced the EPA to do the job, to follow the law. And lo and behold, this past Friday, in a new administration, the Obama administration, the EPA formally declared carbon dioxide and five other heat-treating gases to be pollutants that endanger public health and welfare. Now, John Boehner thinks cow farts are carbon dioxide, and he went on a major Sunday political show and said that. We're going to bring that to you as well. Craig, you got to get that up for me because that's just too funny. So here's what I'm saying. This debate in the media, let me crystallize this and I'll get back to your calls. The reason I am questioning, and that's what I'm doing. Andy writes in here, I'll get this up here first and then I'll lay it out. I know I'm a little jumbled. Bear with me. Personally, I would rather see the torture prosecutions getting media attention over global warming legislation. Really, Andy? Really? Think about that. Whenever something gets trapped in the corporate media news cycle, it gets highly politicized. And then when Republicans use it as an excuse to obstruct, that's my point. Global warming legislation is too important to be subject to that. I would rather it gets quietly handled without anybody having to worry about political posturing about it. The torture issue is already politicized as much as it can be. Here is my point. There is nothing, you can't handle cap and trade global warming legislation quietly. It's going to be the mother of all legislative battles. You're going to have the most powerful industry on the planet, the oil industry, the wealthiest industry, and every donor going after conservative Dems, everyone throwing money at this. That's not going to be quietly handled, okay? So, and likewise, the torture stuff is like giving the other side. I'm not saying not do it, but what it's the gays in the military thing. Okay, there's a good analogy. It derailed a lot of Clinton's momentum right out of the gate, because it's going to give the other side the ability just to do exactly what you're saying here, Andy. Get highly politicized and use it as an excuse to obstruct. So you're gonna. That's like the circus of silly Meanwhile, the really important stuff, the cap and trade, which is going to affect every industry, I mean, it is such big legislation, that's going to be quietly pushed aside. You already have conservative Democrats saying we can't do it right now. Right now, with huge majorities. They don't want to do it. Imagine what happens when the poll numbers come down, because we've had this zoo going on that's highly politicized, and people are looking at this, losing their jobs, and thinking, what the hell are these people doing? None of them are any good. I'm losing my job. I don't have health insurance. I'm losing my house. And we're talking about this some guy named David Addington in torture? You just lost that independent. And you just lost that poll number, and you've just given power to the petroleum industry. And that is my honest-to-God feeling about how the politics and the reality converge on all of this. Okay, I'll shut up and go to Rich in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Rich.
How are you doing there,
Nancy? I'm good. I think I spouted it out.
Boy, you really... Okay, the cap and trade is going to cost the average family of four something like $3,000 a year.
See, really now, where did that? You hear that?
Oh, I read it on the internet. I heard it. I read it in a magazine. I heard some politicians talk about it.
Right. That makes my point. Oh, my God, Rich, you were sent from heaven. You know, that is exactly what we talk about, that we can quietly handle this legislation. Do you realize that the other side is going to have this whole PR campaign that says it's going to cost the average family, that it's a tax on the average family? It is what Obama was saying today, and let me try and tie all this together, is one, if we don't do it, the costs are going to be much higher because, you know what, constantly cleaning up after multi-billion dollar hurricanes ain't cheap, right? And then, hold on, I'm not cutting you off. And then two, that if we do it, all of a sudden we're going to have new green jobs here. And the president talked about it today. I'll play his sound. I have that. Explaining what this is. And what it does is it creates a profit incentive to create the new technologies that will build the green jobs that won't cost families, but that will get this economy out of a ditch. It is the solution to this economic mess we're in. It's not going to cost the family. That is exactly what they want you to believe. And if you don't think they will use this torture thing as a distraction while poor Rich in Buffalo gets hoodwinked to believe that the cap and trade is going to cost him money, then you better email me at nancy@nancyskinnerlive.com and explain yourself, okay? Rich, I'm going to cut you off, but I am going to take a break. Walk around the console a little bit, and we'll be back at 1-888-64-NANCY.
That easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that. It's not that easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things, and people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
This is my theme song. Please make sure that this is played at my funeral. Because it hasn't been easy being
and green.
Green
can be cool.
I will tell you, I was there way before it was cool. Way before
and
when I was
green
a kook.
Can be
All right. Thanks, Craig. That was cute of you. Thank you. Brought to you by John Krieger for me. The Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64 Nancy. That's 1-888-646. 2629. Okay. So you were going to bump with that. I was going to bump with this.
George, the idea that carbon dioxide is a carcinogen that is harmful to our environment is almost comical. Every time we exhale carbon dioxide. Every cow in the world, you know, when they do what they do, you've got more carbon dioxide. And so I think
so you don't believe greenhouse gases are a problem in creating climate change?
Listen, it's clear we've had change in our climate. The question is, how much does man have to do with it? And what
all
is
right,
the...
All right, we'll go more to the... So did you get that? He thinks cows fart carbon dioxide. It's Congressman... it's methane. It's about 12% of the greenhouse gases, but it's probably, in terms of its effect, one of the strongest greenhouse gases. But you've got an elected official today, a guy who's trying to lead the party. He wants to be the leader of the GOP. On television saying the cows fart CO2. When clearly, Congressman, they fart methane. Okay, do you understand my problem, folks? No, we can't do this quietly. This is what we're up against. Let's go to Ed in Redondo Beach. Hi, Ed.
Well, hi, Nancy. You know, I don't think it's an either-or proposition at all. I mean, basically, the more we destroy their credibility on issues like torture that are really morally clear, clear cases, the weaker they'll be when it comes to addressing things like the environment and health care. I mean, you know, we right now, I don't even think we have the political capital to get serious climate change legislation through the Congress or universal health care. And so these guys need to be softened.
Okay, it's an interesting premise. It's a, let's work with this. I like what you're, you know, putting out there. You're saying that right now we don't have the political capital to do this because we have the conservatives that are sort of blocking it. I mean, we could push it through by, you know, if we needed to. But what you're saying is that if we go through the whole court prosecutions on television and the torture stuff and put Cheney in jail, the public's really going to be supportive of us. And those moderate Republicans that voted for Obama, like, say, Krieger, my producer, and lots of other people I know, who all of a sudden are going to feel attacked by party identity as opposed to that more positive message of that I'm going to bring to you Arnold Schwarzenegger is presenting about we can do this. So you think we're going to have more credibility by the time we've put in jail those people, just like the impeachment?
Well, no, the impeachment is different because when you talk about Clinton, you're talking about a trumped-up charge, and you got to trust the people. The people saw through it. In the case of torture, I mean, in one case we're talking about a 7-year-old child being tortured in front of his father. I mean, it doesn't get any more morally clear-cut than that. People will get it. You got to trust democracy and trust people, to understand what's really at stake. And when it's all done, the right will be even more thoroughly discredited than they are already, and we will have more political capital to push through the things that need to get
done. All right,
done.
So let's put it out there. What you guys think about what Ed's saying, that if we go all the way, if we go to bat on this, on TV, all of it, show all of it, we'll have more credibility for which to push through climate change, and that they should be done in that order. That's what I'm presuming that he says. So build up our capital by having Dick Cheney TV 24/7. And then surely, easily, we'll get through massive legislation affecting the planet. I'm putting it out there, Ed. Let's see what people think about it. Okay? All views represented here. 1-888-64-NANCY. We'll let people weigh in on the Ed plan, we'll call it. Okay? Or the Nancy plan.
Today, Dr. Hansen, who heads NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies and who advises Al Gore on the environment, testified to the existence and dangers of global warming. He presented charts that predict the loss of the entire Arctic ice shelf within 2 decades and stated that we are already past safe levels of CO2 in our atmosphere.
What I can say with a very high degree of confidence, I would say more than 99.9% certain, that the safe level of CO2 is no more than 350 ppm, the long-term safe level. And we have already passed that level.
Hansen has given up on hopes of overcoming society's addiction to oil, instead advocating for a moratorium on new coal plants and investment in renewable energy.
If we phased out coal by 2030, then the peak CO2 would only be a bit more than 400 GBq. And, however, it would stay above 350 for a couple of centuries. We could get it down below 350 by means of improved forestry and agricultural practices. We have to level with the public that there has to be a price on carbon emissions. That's the only way we're going to begin to move toward a carbon-free economy, which we have to do.
Dr. Hansen also stated that CEOs of big oil and coal companies should be tried for crimes against humanity and nature for purposely misinforming and misdirecting the public in regards to global warming. Chairman Markey was asked to comment on this accusation after the testimony.
I think when history comes back to ultimately determine who is responsible, I think it will be that rather than accepting the science and making the modifications, they continue to fight this rear guard action. It's a pretty sad moment here. Where you know the technology is there, the warnings from the United Nations, you know that debate is over, except in the minds of these executives that if they can continue to cloud this debate, they believe they can buy more years. But as the starting is, I'm saying we don't have those years. So, yes, I do agree with that.
So that's Chairman Markey, Ed Markey of Massachusetts, agreeing with James Hansen, the preeminent scientist on global warming at NASA, who was censored during the Bush years, that we absolutely must have no choice, do something about global warming. They went so far as to suggest that we should prosecute the CEOs of oil companies for leading a misinformation campaign about global warming. I'm saying, listen, it's the government. It was a law. I don't think you can prosecute corporations for that. If they can get away with it because the government, where there's a law on the books, the Clean Air Act that said that the EPA must protect public health and it must be based on the scientific evidence presented to them, and they rejected it and hid it. Now, there you got a case. So where's the outrage when it comes to laws were broken that could affect all of humanity? And here's the thing, and I'm going to get right back to your calls. Andy's writing back thinking cap and trade is as dead as gun legislation. It's too radioactive. Hello? We don't have a choice, Andy. They'd be better off focusing on green jobs. I mean, this is the battle we'll face. On the article about the EPA and New York Times website about them finally labeling CO2 as a pollutant and regulating it and upholding the law. Okay, EPA upholds the law. It's like an Onion headline or something, right? These are the comments. I just flagged a couple. This is out there, folks. Let's see. Some guy says, this is flat nuts. Apparently, the gas that our trees need to survive is toxic to our environment. Global warming hysteria. Evangelists need a reality check badly. Great. So when I go to the gym for a workout and increase my respiration, I guess I'm like a gross polluter. Mark my words, this is the first step toward a tax to breathe. I mean, that's what we're up against. It's so easy for the other side to mislead on this because they've been doing it forever. So my question is, you think I'd put a proposal out there saying that what we should do is go through the torture stuff on TV, Dick Cheney TV, do the perp walk with Dick Cheney. That will build the Capitol up so that we could pass the most difficult piece of legislation that all of humanity has ever had to pass. I'm putting it to you at 1-888-64-NANCY. Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island, which is a beautiful little town that I adore. And Sam is out in Providence. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
First of all, Providence isn't so little anymore. I mean, you know, small state. But
it's littler than Boston.
Well, yeah, but...
And I lived in Boston.
I grew up in Boston. But
I lived in Marblehead. You know Marblehead?
Oh, I know Marblehead, yes.
Okay. Anyways,
Sam. My point is Boehner's the only guy who thinks that CO2 is a carcinogen? The throwing around the word carcinogen, and CO2 is not, is a scare tactic. And then it's like, oh, they're saying it's a carcinogen. No one's saying it's a carcinogen. It's a global warming issue.
Right.
It's a climate change issue.
Right.
He's trying to make it seem like those of us who are aware of climate change are somehow trying to scare everybody with the same sort of over-the-top fear tactics that we see from the right on a regular.
Well, let me ask you a question. You just set a light off. Do you think it was intentional that he called it a carcinogen? And I see you're a biologist, Sam. And do you think it was intentional that he said that cows fart CO2?
Well, I think the whole cow farting thing, I think, is just plain ignorance on his part. It's easy to say, you know, what do we exhale? What comes out of us as a gas? Oh, it's carbon dioxide. You know, I don't know what Boehner's background is in the sciences or if he has any experience in that.
Oh, Lord, I hope not, because that institution should not be credentialed.
But whether he meant it intentionally as a carcinogen, I mean, even methane isn't a carcinogen. I mean, CO2 is dangerous in very high concentrations because, you know,
one of the most potent greenhouse gases as well. I mean, carbon is more plentiful in the mixture of greenhouse gases, but
methane is an even harder core greenhouse gas.
Exactly.
But there are a number of other ones that are produced naturally, and goodness knows there's enough methane under the ocean that to cause problems.
Okay.
But for him to say carbon dioxide is a carcinogen is...
Well, do you think could be ignorant? That could have been. See, I wouldn't be surprised if that were purposeful, because the whole idea here, the whole thing has been about confusion. So that these guys, I just read you a couple of the comments saying, you know, you're saying if I go to the gym, I'm a polluter. And it's so easy to throw something out there and then mislead them. And then these guys go off on this because, yes, these are natural substances. But what the hard part is, when you're a grown up, you have to say, oh, but the problem is. When we triple their concentration in the atmosphere, they lock in the ultraviolet rays and slowly heat the planet in ways that dislodge the entire jet stream and cause extreme climate events.
Exactly.
That's harder to spit out.
I'm hoping that this was just simply a case of ignorance on his part. I'm hoping it wasn't on purpose, because if it's on purpose... It's a massive disinformation thing, and I would hope that someone, especially when we're talking about climate change and the world and, you know, our species, I would hope not someone trying to mess around with us.
Okay, well, light a candle.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Keep the hope alive that it was, in fact, not ignorance on Boehner's part, and it wasn't purposeful, and it was just, you know, didn't brush up on his... I don't know, his excretory gases, apparently. 1-888-64-NANCY. Let's go to upstate New York and say hello to Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hello. I just wanted to say that, you know, Barack has probably accomplished more in, like, the 3 months than Bush did in about 2 years. You know?
Yeah,
He had actually gotten things done. Now, if we go, you know, it's kind of like you go... Are you going after Al Capone for the tax evasion? They probably didn't want to get that, but they got rid of it. We got to do that. We got to do that if we're going to get anywhere.
But okay, all right. So that's an interesting theory. It sort of goes on the Ed plan. We couldn't get them for their crimes against the planet, but we can get them on sort of the tax evasion equivalent in torture, because the record is black and white.
Yeah.
But guess what? In so doing, do we jeopardize the legislation that saves us all? That's what I was trying to say about vengeance or survival. People weren't getting that. If in fact that choice, and that's a tough choice to make politically, if we have to say, you know what, God, I would love to nail these guys. I don't care whether it's torture or that a violation of law or this one, because there were so many. But if we do it, we essentially are slitting our own throats in terms of the planet and what we need to do.
Well, the thing there is, like, is it going to start more partisanship? I mean, for crepes' sake, the Republicans are blocking everything.
I know, but you said, Eric, it says here that you would say it's going to get partisan. Both of them are partisan, so you would prefer torture over global warming. What does that get you, Larry? So you put one guy, you put the bad guys behind. I am going to evoke a spiritual principle here. Which one really is of higher value? Okay, they are always talking about the Bible and the evangelical Christians and all this stuff, right? How are we actually going to practice a more spiritual principle? If we had to choose, honestly, and that's, I guess there are two questions. Some people don't think there's a choice. That's open for debate. But if you have to choose, you're saying between torture and global warming, you would choose torture. Do you think that's an enlightened perspective, that you would choose retribution over saving life that is now and will be?
Well, there's there's practicality and, you know, what you'd like to do.
I didn't read that asterisk in the Bible. I did not see that unless it's impracticable. But I feel your pain. I feel your pain, Larry, when you say they're both going to be partisan is your point. And I think that's a point well taken. I agree with it.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. All right, Craig, do I get one more here? All right, let's see where we're going. We're going to go to Phil in Venice. I hope that's Venice Beach, California. You guys are making me jealous. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how are you, Nancy?
I'm well, thank you.
Yes, it is Venice Beach, California.
Cool, I worked out at that. Yes. What's that gym right there on the beach? World Gym, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know what? You know who was right next to me on the machine was Patrick Swayze, oddly enough. Cool. Yeah, on the treadmill. I'm sorry, Phil, go ahead.
Well, my question is, I mean, everybody's talking about carbon dioxide, and the first thing that caught my ear, and maybe I'm under the wrong impression, but I always thought that carbon monoxide was the big gas that we're worried about that our cars produce that is polluting the atmosphere that we're, you know, supposed to be reining in and keeping under control. I know carbon dioxide is obviously a poisonous gas in high concentration, but, you know, like you've been joking about for the past 5 minutes, I mean, yeah, it's what plants feed on and what, you know, what makes us go, kind of, in a way. Mm-hmm. So I'm just confused by this.
Right. Well, it's not you, Phil. It's a subject you can be easily confused on. That's why there's such a problem with it. The difference is CO2, carbon dioxide, is not toxic. It's part of the process. But what happens, and the difference is that CO2, when the concentrations build up, that's in the atmosphere. That's what it's the ring around our planet, and it's now tripled, and so it locks in the ultraviolet rays that usually bounce back off the Earth and go back out. And so it warms the planet, because those ultraviolet rays that heat the planet, keep it warm, just get hotter and hotter and hotter, and the globe warms, and that affects the oceans, and then that affects the jet streams and all the currents and precipitation and screws with the weather. Carbon monoxide is a poisonous gas in your house. That's why you got the little thing. That'll kill you right there. That's asphyxiation. That's a poisonous gas. That's different than CO2, which is not poisonous to you when we're just hanging out. But when we're all, like, driving around, 25% of our emissions, we're going to get to Arnold Schwarzenegger and his statements on that. 25% of the CO2 that we're putting into the atmosphere, we're already past the tipping point, is coming from automobiles, my friends, and from factories and other sources. And so it's not. And cows don't fart it. That's methane. That's a different gas, okay? So that's why they're going to have an easy time if we don't use the oxygen in the media to get ourselves all educated and do what we all know has to be done. It has to be done. We're 20 years late, okay? That's still a good question. Don't feel confused, because it's going to be so easy for Boehners of the world and everyone else and Rush Limbaugh to do exactly this whole nonsense thing to you as everyone else. I'm just saying, I'm ginned up for the fight. And the Nancy Skinner Show. Your calls. We'll continue. To be debating cow farts on the national radio program. Boy, life is weird. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. And I guess I'm me, 1-888-64 Nancy. Got an email from, this is from Les, who writes in, says, don't cow farts, don't laugh. A 2006 report by the UN FAO, Food and Agricultural Organization, concludes that animal agriculture contributes more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere than all cars, trucks, planes, and ships in the world combined. let's see. That's because it's methane, and the more cars, methane is roughly 12 times more potent. I don't know about the combined part, but I certainly know that it's methane, and it's much more potent in lower concentrations. And I know I don't have the credentials to do what it is I do, according to some of you, but let's see, when I helped rebuild those towns off the floodplain as models of environmental sustainability, they had lots of cows and lots of manure, so what we did is we built an anaerobic generator, which takes that methane in a contained unit and facilities and converts the methane to energy. So you can take cow waste, actually, and turn it into energy. You run it through a generator, and you have energy. So you call it pig power or cow power or whatever. It's possible. Okay? Just trust me. I've been there on this. Okay, Tom has been holding... Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Tom's been holding on forever, so I'm going to get him in here. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for holding on. I do appreciate your patience, sir.
Hi, Nancy. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Well, you know, I don't want to rebuke you here because I know you're a very good liberal and...
whatever. I don't like labels. I just don't even, I just like, whatever. I think that they've harmed us more than hurt anything we've all tried to do. That's my view.
Well, but you're open-minded.
That's true.
And so I don't want you to take the playbook of Sean Hannity or Ann Coulter or anyone like that who tries to choose between one or two bad things.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that for all the money in the world because it's a little thing called integrity. But go ahead.
Well, and when we have an outrage, it's torture and the environment not being handled properly are both properly outrageous. But I think as far as priorities are concerned, the president is very even keeled, and that's part of the reason why we chose him over someone who was going to be. Knee-jerk decider, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's why
the president, it took him so long, and don't you think, knowing that, and I got more sound on him today, knowing he knows all this, what I'm talking about the urgency of action, you don't think that he's, in his mind, he's considered the circus atmosphere that will consume his political capital so that he won't be able to push through this? And you don't think he's tried to balance that out in his head?
Yeah, I believe that he has, but I also think that the war crimes that went on for far too long because someone else was in the White House who knocked out all of it is something that he knows he's going to have to. He doesn't have time to say that that this is something that we can't deal with right at the moment when it's the Justice Department who needs to. Take care of this, and this has got to be a priority.
A priority. Okay, Tom.
Yeah.
All right, well, hey, thanks for hanging on. I just think it's easier to understand, and it's easier to get angry about. And trust me, I was angry about this too, but, you got to choose. You got to pick your battle sometime. I'm saying forever, save the planet. Save yourself, then go after those guys, okay? What would Buddha do? That's the question on the table on the Nancy Skinner Show.
One question that's on the mind of everybody here is the future of GM, the future of Chrysler. Do you think Washington's too involved here in terms of trying to change these companies?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that the car manufacturers, the car companies need help right now, and I think that they should get the help. I think that Washington should come in and be a partner in this. I think the taxpayers don't mind if you do that, if you do it the right way. If everyone makes concessions, I think if the auto workers make concessions, which I have heard that they are willing to do that, and I think that's terrific because there's a hardworking people and that have contributed so much to our economy in America. I think that if the manufacturers themselves make concessions, and I think if the government is listening carefully and is a good partner, I think it's good to help because it was government that created the mess in the first place. It was not the car manufacturers that created the mess. It's government that has screwed up along the way because we don't have an energy policy. I mean, 2 years ago when the oil prices went up and, it took away you know, hundreds of dollars from hardworking people every month just to buy fuel, and that money was not available to go out and buy things. That really was painful for the economy and really was damaging for the economy. So those are all things.
Listen up, people of California. That was your governor in Motown a couple days ago at the Society of Automotive Engineers, making a whole lot of sense. Listen to this. Listen to this guy.
We should not be to the mercy of the Middle East. We should not be to the mercy of foreign oil. I think that presidents since Eisenhower have talked about it, that we ought to be energy independent, and that we should have alternative fuel vehicles. I think other presidents since then have talked about it. And every time a president talks about energy independence, we are depending more and more on foreign oil. So I think that has to go and change. And we have to put a policy in place that where manufacturers, like the car manufacturers, know that this policy will not be changed. That because when you build cars, alternative fuel cars, I think anyone here will agree that it takes, 10 years of ramp-up time. You can't just go and make decisions from one year to the next and say next year we have electric cars or next year we have a hydrogen car or hybrid cars. It takes time to do the research and development. I think government should give that research and development money and make it available to the manufacturers, to the car manufacturers. But then there should be a policy in place, not like with Jimmy Carter, who said, okay, we're going to go in a different direction now. We do shale oil exploration and windmills and solar. And then the next administration comes in because the oil price is down, now changes all of those laws and all those tax incentives and goes in a different direction. So how can the car manufacturers go and start changing their manufacturing, their plans, when there's really no goal? What is America's vision in the future of an energy? What is our vision when it comes to cars? What is our vision when it comes to reduction of greenhouse gases? What is our vision on tailpipe emission standards and low carbon fuel standards? We don't have a vision. Now, this administration is working very hard to create a vision, which is terrific. But for the last two, three administrations, we haven't seen anything. And so this is, I think, frustrating for the car manufacturers, and it's frustrating for the consumer, because we don't know which direction we're going, and this is why.
How about them Republican apples? You know your governor better than I and the Nancy Skinner Show, our listeners in California. But I listened to him. He came to a big conference here in Detroit at the Society of Automotive Engineers, thousands of people, all the smart people getting together. And the discussion continued. We'll go through that more about. Now, he basically said the government has a role to play. They should help. He also talked about the fact that, you know, we should pursue a mix of technologies. The one area where the government really, in terms of energy policy, where they have gotten somewhat involved, a little bit involved, is in biofuels. And they've subsidized biofuels. But in terms of really setting that big vision of, you know, what it should be, so that we don't have to keep hemming and hawing and zigzagging all over the place, no, not so much. So joining me to talk about the government's energy policy heretofore, at biofuels, their mix, the vision, is Craig Cox. He's the Midwest Vice President of the Environmental Working Group, which is a big national group that's led on a lot of issues, and they have studied biofuels specifically in a report that they've just released, and he joins me now. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
First of all, I wanted you to hear a little bit of Governor Schwarzenegger there in Detroit, but so what is your conclusion? We've been talking a little bit about setting this vision. I've not been attached per se to exactly the mix of technology. I know technology is a solution. I have pretty much I'm of the RMI Amory Lovins thought that hydrogen solar economy is somewhat the mix that we have to shoot for, but there is a transition and that ethanol plays a role in that. And I think that's what the president said today. And you guys are saying not so much. Is that what this report is saying?
That's right. I mean, I couldn't agree more with the governor that we've got to move away from fossil fuels as fast as we can. So there's no disagreement there. The problem is that corn ethanol, that's the way we produce ethanol today, is just not a good way to do that. I mean, even if we use the entire corn crop in the United States to produce ethanol, you know, we'd only displace maybe 12% of the gasoline we use each year. And we're certainly not going to use the whole corn crop to produce ethanol. So it's just not going to get us there. It's just impossible for corn ethanol to get us there.
Mm-hmm. And was it ever designed to be the solution, or was it designed to, you know, somebody realize, hey, we could run a car on ethanol, flex fuel, and it's just sort of you had the political support from farm states, and it turned into subsidies, and that's how it happened?
Yeah, ethanol has always been more about finding new uses for corn than it's been about finding an alternative energy.
Well, now, what about the Brazilian miracle? Is it Brazil that derives greater than half of all of its energy from ethanol, but it's sugar cane-based, correct?
Yep, that's right. And sugar cane is a whole lot more efficient than corn.
Why is that? It's just that the BTUs, like switchgrass, and they all have different levels of energy content in them? Is that what it boils down to?
Yeah, but cane has much more sugar in it than corn, so you can get more ethanol per acre out of sugar cane than you can out of corn. And they also use what's called the bagasse. It's a leftover biomass after they produce the ethanol to burn that to fuel their conversion plants. So it works out very well for them.
Okay. All right. So if you're saying it's not the most efficient use, you agree we have to get to something like hydrogen, obviously, is absolutely clean burning. We got a little problem there with the production of that and the energy equation therein. But is not ethanol a solution, a transition solution? Until we build the infrastructure for hydrogen and or the technology mix that is the long-term vision?
Well, let me say two things on that. The first thing is the real solution, real immediate solution, is greater fuel efficiency. You know, we seem to keep overlooking that, but we could do much more to reduce our dependence on fossil fuel in the near term by just driving cars that get better gas mileage, or driving cars in ways that get our current cars better gas mileage. That could do much, much more than biofuels are going to do, especially over the next 20 years or so.
So, yeah, you're saying that, which is what we've been trying to do, but, you know, politically it's been a little difficult. So, Craig, here's one thing I want you to, in the interest of time here, to clear up, because I heard this today, I think, on I joke and say my honey bunny Rush Limbaugh. He's talking about a report that said that biofuels are more polluting than gasoline. You know what? I obviously I didn't have time to look it up en route, but that's a specious charge. I would assume. I would say that they're not the perfect fuel. They're not as good as, say, hydrogen, but they cannot possibly be worse than pure hydrocarbon.
It depends. There are studies that show that if you convert a bunch of land from forest and grassland in order to grow crops to produce biofuels, you may be worse than gasoline.
Because you're losing the sequestration effect of the forestry.
Right.
You add that to the equation, and then they're more polluting. Okay, see, I always have to figure out how he's confusing me, and that's how he's doing it. So if you put all those factors together, folks, do you get that? So what Craig is saying is, like, one, they aren't as good as pure, but two, when you strip the acreage, the carbon dioxide is sequestered out of the air, sucked out of the air, if you will, and it stays in the trees and the forest. That's why when we clear cut, say, rainforests, we're just taking our lungs and slashing them, right, and cutting them out. And the same thing, even any agricultural land or the tundra or whatever, that absorbs the carbon dioxide. So combined, you're saying that could have the effect of making Rush Limbaugh actually write about something.
I'm sorry.
You should be. Well, Craig, we're glad you joined us for a little bit to talk about that. I know there is a raging controversy over ethanol and that aspect of it, and I think the work that you do at the Environmental Working Group is great work, so I appreciate you spending
your
time.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. No, it cannot be. Well, no, he's confusing. You get it, right? You got that? I knew there was a hook, but it just took me a second. Okay? It took me a second. So that. Ooh, combine that with the sequestration loss, and you, yeah, maybe. Not the way he said it. Not the way he's going to mislead his minions of 20 million listeners, though. Back to our original story. Okay, I'm going to get back into Arnold Schwarzenegger making sense. Last time I checked, folks, in California, he is a Republican who's making sense to me. Okay, I'm in Detroit. Actually, there's a little connection between he and I that I'm going to share with you that you didn't know about, that he talked about. And so I need you, we have a lot of callers and listeners in California, to weigh in on this. Is it possible that he's really making sense and he's a Republican? 1-888, maybe just on this issue? Huh? 1-888-64-NANCY. 1-888-646-2629.
Scientific debate about global warming is over. The good news is that we have the technology today to avert global warming and all of its disastrous impact.
My plan specifically is to repeal $6 billion in tax subsidies given by President Bush and Joe Noenberg to the oil companies and reinvest that in Michigan's auto industry to produce the next generation of fuel-efficient vehicles.
All we need today is leadership. And that's why we need to elect Nancy Skinner to Congress.
I'm Nancy Skinner and I approve this message.
There you have it. I can't. That's me. 2006, Bobby Kennedy Jr. doing. I'm running for Congress. 2006, and let me just tell you, you heard this ad again. In the auto industry, the home. I'm in the smack dab in the home of the auto industry. Okay, nobody talks about this here.
The scientific debate about global warming is over.
My first
ad. The good
ad.
News is that we have the technology today to avert global warming and all of its disastrous impact.
My plan specifically is to repeal $6 billion in tax subsidies given by President Bush and Joe Noenberg to the oil companies and reinvest that in Michigan's auto industry to produce the next generation of fuel-efficient vehicles.
All we need today is leadership. And that's why we need to elect Nancy Skinner to Congress.
I'm Nancy Skinner, and I approve this message.
Okay, so my consultant said, are you nuts? You can't run on global warming in the home of the auto industry. My platform was retooling the auto industry to make it more fuel efficient, repealing the subsidies to the oil company, and getting that to make them more fuel efficient, which now they're begging for, right? The guy, the incumbent, 14-year incumbent I ran against, he had been winning by 20-point margins up to this point, and I came within 3 points, just over 3 points in that race. Running on the issue of global warming and retooling the auto industry in 2006. It was painful. My race was so close they couldn't report it for a couple days. And so what happened was all of a sudden the DCCC decided, hey, we can win this race. This nobody came within 3 points of winning. This loser nobody who had the nerve to run on global warming in the home of the auto industry. So they recruited a candidate and he won. And also now this 14-year incumbent who had never done anything, basically Joe Noenberg, he was the worst, Mr. Anti-Global Warming. That's why I had to run. He put up this billboard saying California to Detroit drop dead as a result. So I woke this guy up. I mean, he was 73 years old, never did anything. All of a sudden he knew he was in trouble. Put up these billboards saying California to Detroit drop dead, and all of a sudden it wakes this congressman up, and he puts these all over Detroit or a couple places, and it's big news, gets all over to California. Arnold Schwarzenegger's here a couple days ago and he's asked about it.
Don, so I love coming back, but I think there were billboards around Michigan that say Arnold to Michigan drop dead, and of course it's not something that I said. What I basically said was, Michigan, get off your butt and go and start producing cars that really are cars of the future and not get stuck with this with engines that use, where you can only go 10 miles per gallon. But there's new technology available. Let's go in the direction of new technology. And now we see, of course, great changes happening. I think that the crisis like this, the economic crisis, and seeing that oil prices have doubled just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I think it's and now with the economic crisis in general, I think there is now great opportunities there, and I think that we have seen a great willingness in Detroit to go and make great changes, working with the government and forming a public-private partnership there. And making also a commitment not only to reduce the cost of vehicles, but also to kind of look in the future and say we got to produce more and develop more alternative fuel vehicles. So that's the direction they're going, and I'm very proud of Detroit to go and look at that and look at this as not as an old era and looking at the back, but to look forward at this new opportunity and new era, and that's what we are celebrating.
So, yours truly lost that battle, okay? I'm still trying to win the war, though, okay? But it was because I stood up when no one would challenge this, no one would touch this guy because he was untouchable, and I ran and came that close that my opponent put that billboard up, and that billboard got to California, and I don't think that that changed or influenced the governor. But he's back here talking about that billboard, and it started this debate, and I am keeping this going. So you can understand how I feel on Earth Day, okay? And when we continue, we're going to come back to, I have more sound on your governor in California, our listeners, and you can tell me what you think about him on the Nancy Skinner Show.
In a sense, Detroit is the car capital of the U.S. in terms of the auto manufacturing. But California is considered the car capital in terms of developing future technology, people wanting to adapt before other parts of the country. And that Detroit has lost California. It's been lost for years. What's the view in California of the big three and of where they are right now and of what the people out in California would like to see from the big three?
Well, I'm sure there's some people that huge fans of what Detroit has produced. I'm one of them. I'm a big fan of the cars that they have produced. But at the same time, you got to also be critical and got to say, but they should also produce the vehicles that, you know, have zero emissions. Zero greenhouse gas emissions and the alternative fuel. I think that Detroit has been slow in that area, but not just because they wanted to be slow. It's just, again, because of a lack of leadership in Washington. So I have to put the blame on the government, and I have to put the blame on Detroit by being slow. I think both of them to share the blame here.
Okay, so I'm going to really cause some trouble for you. Nancy Skinner Show seem to be good at that. I'm thinking to myself, that is Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Society of Automotive Engineers here in Detroit a couple days ago. Thousands of engineers that get together. I mean, the people that really design the future of cars, saying that. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, the whole labor thing, I'm getting swipe burp. You have the conservadems in D.C. who are saying now is not the time for cap and trade. Nope, nope, none of that global warming stuff, Democrats. And you've got this Republican governor who he doesn't shy away from global warming, as we must absolutely do it, talks about global warming, talks about zero-emission vehicles, actually goes so far as to say the government has a very important role in here, in this whole situation, that the government should provide research dollars for advanced technology and partner with them, and blames the government. He blames them equally, as you heard him say. But he said that it's for lack of an energy policy like other countries had that allowed the automakers basically to get away with whatever it is that they wanted to, and didn't get them on track. So you got conservadoms stomping cap and trade, the Republican governor saying this absolutely has to happen. When I talk about changing hearts and minds, and you got a schmuck in his car, okay, who is listening. I mean that in a really nice, loving way, the schmuck. Chuck the schmuck, let's say, Chuck the schmuck. And he's flipping the channels, and he's listening to Rush, who's making fun of, saying you're going to have to drive a little crap can, and making fun of it. Then he hears an Arnold Schwarzenegger ask a question like this.
Summarizing here was essentially, should the government be giving people some kind of an incentive to get rid of their Hummers? In other words, you won't drive a Hummer anymore in the United States, that we, in essence, are pushing people away from those ultra-large SUVs. What are your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, let me just say there's nothing wrong with the Hummer. The Hummer is a great vehicle, okay? So let's make that clear. What is a misunderstanding a lot of times when I hear that is that people really don't mean that we should get rid of the Hummer or we should get rid of large vehicles. What we should do is we should change the technology within those vehicles.
Which
like
you have
for
done.
Instance, for instance, we, as you know, I have, you know, 12 cars. I love cars. That's why I'm very, very happy to be here today in Detroit amongst all of you. I love cars and always did. And fortunately, I have enough money so I can buy those cars. And when we saw the technology changing, we turned one Hummer, as a matter of fact, with the help of General Motors, turned one Hummer into a hydrogen Hummer. So there's no greenhouse gas emissions. So it doesn't matter what the size of the car is, there's no greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay, so Trump is from Rock has a choice. He wants to be macho, and now it's not just Rush Limbaugh that he listens to saying he has to drive some crap can. He's got Arnold Schwarzenegger, movie star, and saying, you know, it's not the size, it's not, size doesn't matter. That's sort of funny. That's kind of what Arnold said, size doesn't matter. But he is, and that's where they have to go. It's the technology within the vehicle, and certainly there's room for debate. But do you understand that? Chuck the Schmuck now doesn't feel like a weenie unless he supports Rush Limbaugh. So these labels, schmables, aren't helping us because Arnold Schwarzenegger has moved to the correct position on this issue, in my view. And so let's hear from some folks in California, because I'm thinking, you know, this is a good thing. And any time we can get Chuck the Schmuck to say, oh, okay, cars don't fart CO2, then that's a good thing. Let's see, James is in California, lifelong Democrat. Hi, James.
How's it going, Effie?
Very well, thank you.
You know, yeah, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm a short life. I'm only 23, but I worked on the Obama campaign. You know, I canvassed, you know, worked across the country. But I support Arnold, who's a Republican, because of how green he is. And, you know, that's the major issue to me. And really, it's a tough decision for me this coming election when he's going to have to leave, because I wish that he could stay, because ever since he got in, he's been so green, you know, sponsoring things like, you know, the Tesla company, mm-hmm. Phoenix Motor Cars is another one, working to, you know, increase solar power plants, working on, you know, the hydrogen highway, a new highway going from California all the way up to Oregon, which would have spots on it so people could change out really quickly their electric cars batteries mm-hmm. to make it just as quick as filling gas. You know, he's done so much for California. I mean, and especially on the green issue, that
which has shaped the national agenda. So, you know, because of that, and I don't know how much under his tenure versus before that. I know California's always been ahead with the California Air Resource Board and whatnot. So doesn't that, you know, do you have? I don't see where you would have a struggle. You're a Democrat, but he's so green, you shouldn't really have to choose between your party label and the right position on an issue. So. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the main issue for me. I think the main problem is that everyone else who has that R label on them, a Republican, are the farthest from it. You have people like John Boehner making fun, saying that, you know, we breathe CO2 every day, so how could that possibly be causing a problem? And these, you know, idiots, and Arnold, who people made fun of a lot when he first ran as being some idiot, you know, with the accent and everything, he's turned out to be a really smart guy and a really, you know, probably the biggest green crusader in the world.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, thanks for calling, James. I appreciate it. I mean, I'm listening to him during this interview at the SAE conference going, oh, my God. So, you know, this is someone that we've made fun of. And he's coming to Detroit. He did. He told Detroit to get off their butt, which I did too, in a way, you know. And now that, you know, a lot of the people, like I keep saying, there are a lot of people who agree with that and in Detroit, and they're trying as fast as they can to make it happen. So the old generation is gone. The new folks are in. Let's go to Al, who's in Santa Ana, California. Hi, Al.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to comment on that last statement by Arnold. Regarding, we can make a Hummer and you can take any vehicle and, you know, just make it have no emissions and stuff. And I think that really misses the point big time. And I'll tell you why. Well, number one, where do you get your hydrogen from? There's no silver bullet here. You know, we're talking about making energy. Right now they make hydrogen from the reformation of natural gas, not the greenhouse gas producing, but the fossil fuel. So, you know, if you're going to take something and, you know, drive this big monster down the road just because it doesn't have any emissions itself, you still have to think upstream, what do you do? You know, what are you doing? You know, why do you need such a heavy, huge vehicle to drive around in? I mean, if you need it, that's one thing. But, you know, I think that that was a very glib answer, you know, because we're in an energy crisis. It's not just a, you know, I mean, you know, where do you get your energy for?
Well, you're making, no, you're making a really good point, Al. So let me translate. What you're saying is that the energy, more, a bigger vehicle requires more energy. More energy requires more, more generation of that energy. And until we find that magic elixir, that size does matter, somewhat. And I agree. I guess I'm going to go halfway on this. There is something that we've all been trying to go after. You know, where there's a, Al, you're kind of, can you turn your, I'm going to put you on hold there because it's a little loud, that called electrolysis, and where we use, you know, the perfect formula is that we are splitting water to make hydrogen. I'm not saying everyone should drive a Hummer, okay? Like they're selling Hummer. Maybe they'll sell. Did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger, he designed the Hummer? I don't know if you folks know that, but he took it, he liked it as a military vehicle, and then worked with GM to turn it into a commercial vehicle. But in any case, it's somewhere, let's see if Al, I don't want to cut you off. I'm somewhere in the middle here, Al, because it's not the alternative. No, you're still like too loud. The alternative argument is that, oh, we've all got to drive around in these little smart cars, okay? Because that's what Rush wants you to believe. No, there is a transition because there are going to be different size vehicles required for people. And it's not dependent on the fuels, the fossil fuels, that we can move to new technologies and new infrastructures. And he also, by the way, I should say, in these interviews, talks about high-speed rail. So, you know, he's not just in isolation. You have to hear the whole interview. He was saying we need to move and advance technology. That size isn't the most important thing, and that we need to really get up to speed like they are in Europe on high-speed rail. He talks about meeting the greenhouse gas emissions of 1990 levels, about making that commitment, about never changing that policy, never going back on that policy, despite whatever administration comes in. And he specifically jabbed the Reagan administration in his interview. He said Carter got on the right path, and then the next administration came in and changed the policy, and he's a Republican. So, you know what I'm saying? Chuck the Schmuck now has a superhero, and put Schwarzenegger next to Rush Limbaugh in the macho category, and see what Chuck the Schmuck thinks about that. And the more people that we have in our camp on this, the easier it is to overcome the bozos who say that sweating is increasing global warming. Okay? Plus, it all comes back around. Why I want to change hearts and minds. And that labels sometimes can deceive. All right, we got one more segment. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. Oh, by the way, on Earth Day, I really don't need to tell you, do I? Because we could do the whole shtick on, you know, what you can do for the environment. They fight these bigger battles. I neglected to mention that on Earth Day, which is like my birthday on the Nancy Skinner Show. You do know what you can do. You go to your own governor's website, some of you folks in California. He's got it right on the front page, I noticed. Things you can do, you know, adjust your thermostat by 2 degrees, replace the air filters in or the filters in your air conditioner, wrap your water heater in an insulating blanket, install a solar water heater, unplug your electronics when not in use, adjust your computer settings, replace your electronics that are old, of course, compact fluorescent stuff. You know, you wash your clothes in cold water, right? You know that old trick, don't you? You know, there's lots in showers instead of baths. Isn't that when I was like 6? So you do know those things. I don't need to spend valuable airspace dealing with them. But I do want to say that it's surprising to me that it took, you know, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger comes here and to Detroit. And it offers to do a commercial, in fact, for Detroit. And to me, it's blows the mind that we have conservative Dems who are saying, no, we can't do cap and trade right now, and a governor who's all for, a Republican, who's all for all of that. Daryl is in, are you in Los Angeles, Daryl?
I certainly am. I'm on the campus of UCLA right now. And, you know, I wanted to take, first off, I enjoy your show, but I wanted to take issue with some comments you've made about General Motors and the Volt in particular. I don't see this as being the godsend resurrection of General Motors. They have been lacking innovation for so long. But to give you some particular points about the Volt, just a few weeks ago, the executive-elect, he had announced that the car is probably going to have a projected price of $48,000. Now, that's going up from $30,000 just a year ago. That takes it out of the price range of the average consumer. You're looking at a car that they're really challenged to get 40 miles on an electrical charge. And unless you are a homeowner that has a garage or a place that you can plug that vehicle in at night, you're not going to get 40,000 miles on it. And then the other issue.
You mean
is
40 miles, so people understand
40
this, Daryl.
Miles, sorry,
what the Volt is it's the first fully functioning electric vehicle. So you can go up to 40 miles without ever using any recharging. Okay, just on the electric motor itself, not any emissions whatsoever. So that's why they can't do miles per gallon with the testing, which would be easily above 100 miles. Easily above 100 miles.
But those lithium-ion batteries are questionable. They've only done 2 years of testing on them, and we're looking at a projected cost of about $10,000 for the replacement of those batteries. So for the average consumer today who's keeping their car for 8, 9, 10 years, if that car, say, has a 5-year warranty, are they going to be ready to take out of their pocket a $10,000 expense to replace the batteries at the end of that warranty?
Yeah.
There are a lot of issues with this car.
I know. Daryl? I think that, you know, now, you know, you're making a lot of sense. And, in fact, the whole moon thing, like, come on. Look at the moon. I mean, look at it. So far away. You know, what were we thinking? That we could go to the moon. Daryl, the idea is this.
That's kind of silly. We're not talking about a dream.
No, because I'm talking about the specifics.
We're talking about a product
Let me answer you. Yes, I was being, I'm sorry, I was using irony there. We're talking about price points. We're talking about economies of scale at this point. And that is what, you know, your governor talked about, is that it does, you are correct. It is going to take the economies of scale. It is going to take the assistance of you and me and the taxpayer, these tax credits. The president mentioned it today in Iowa, that there's $7,500 tax credits in there. We have to incentivize that, this technology, so that we get up to the economies of scale that justify lowering the price, that gets it into the price point. Daryl, you are correct, sir. But it is not an insurmountable challenge. Wait, you took Daryl off there for me? Is this Daryl? Okay. So it is not an insurmountable challenge. Like the moon, okay? There was one obstacle. Okay, yeah, I'm sure they had to figure it out, the solar power. There's so many obstacles. That it's an expensive technology now? We can overcome that, Daryl. The choice is what?
But we're talking two different issues. I'm not talking about people addressing the challenge and going forward with addressing that challenge. I'm talking about a manufacturer making claims that it's really questionable that their product will come out meeting those claims, especially when they're talking about bringing out a product in a year. We're not talking about President Kennedy and seeking the challenge to put a man on the moon. We're talking about people.
This one's more important, Daryl. I would challenge you on that, Daryl.
And unfortunately, not look at their products for so many years. They've simply looked at the profits, quarterly profits for their stock.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I ran on. Did you hear the listen earlier? I ran on that issue. for Congress. I put my skin in the game, if you will. So the past is the past, Daryl. The future is we need a manufacturing base. There are lots of people who are not associated with that past who are at these companies who will step up to the plate and meet all the challenges who, like your governor.
From the past, we are condemned to repeat.
So do you think that the solution is just let them go bankrupt?
No, that is not what
then
I
what? Then what? Then what?
My point is to make sure that they are on the right path. I don't necessarily see them with the product. Ford has interesting products right now. I don't see General Motors with the product online that will make a difference.
Well, we're out of time, Daryl, but they have lots in the pipeline. I have 20 seconds, so I'm not going to be able to tell you that I'm good, but not that good. It is. It's greater than the challenge of the moon, folks. It is. And the deadline is in a couple weeks. We'll talk about it tomorrow on the Nancy Skinner Show.